More bad news delivered in even tones.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 14, A Winter's Tale. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, a very momentous one, we want to tell you what's happening on the Patreon. Again with this episode 257, dropping September 26th, is let's read about Beverly Hills 90210 in the September 23rd, 1994 Entertainment Weekly. If you remember your years and seasons, this is right around the start of season 5, the first post-Brenda season, and the writer, David Brown, got to go to set and talk to people and observe them, and some people are real fucking bitches, and not all the ones you would expect either. It was quite a ride. There will be visual aids. In the meantime, we'll link to the cover story at entertainmentweekly.com, but you will want to click through to the visual aids to see every page we're talking about, because we get into a lot of other parts of the issue as well. Again, with this podcast.com/club is where you go for all the information on what you get when you join the club, including our campaign, which is ongoing. We're driving to stickers, driving past that to the Gina Fattor interview, to Dave Holmes answering your questions about Jenny and Tori's fucking tour. And then finally, to full season recaps of second short run shows, such as, I mean, ones we've already mentioned on other Patreon episodes. Ringer, My So-Called Life, of course, is one people are very excited about. Popular was 2 seasons, but maybe we'll throw Popular in there. Who's to say? So join us and help us reach those milestones to unlock more content we want to bring to you. Again, with this podcast.com/club.
You need those Who Fucked stickers.
Like, you need them.
Big time. So,
you really do.
Mm-hmm. One thing at a time.
Let's get into this episode, starting with the B plot. Mr. Brooks is closing out his final chapter in the Contrivance Ward. We hear about Mr. Brooks before we see him. As Joey's heading out for the big ski weekend, which we'll get to, Gretchen suggests that Joey call Dawson at some point while she's gone. Also, Jen thinks she should stay in town to support Grams, but since she says it while standing next to the bus holding her bag, I don't really believe she means that, and she does, in fact, go on the trip. The first we see of Mr. Brooks is when Dawson comes to visit him, or rather his room, because Mr. Brooks is in a coma brought on by pills, as Grams puts it. She says the machines are keeping him alive, but, you know, he still has cancer. Dawson is disturbed that Mr. Brooks is stuck between dying and dead. I am disturbed that neither of Dawson's parents is here, since, as we're about to have confirmed, this is basically his first contact with the death of someone he actually knows. Like,
yeah,
go with him.
Yeah. Also, he's still 17 and
yes,
living under your roof. Like, there is no part of this process that should be unattended by a parent. Sorry.
Agree. Graham says that no matter what the medical staff does, Mr. Brooks's outcome is in God's hands. Dawson is leaving the hospital when we see Buster Bluth got yet another degree and is trying out a new job. Doctor, just kidding. But this is a young Tony Hale playing Dr. Bronin and telling Dawson they have to discuss the health proxy he signed illegally. Dawson says that was just so he could pick up the prescriptions Mr. Brooks was going to try to euthanize himself with. Not that he says that part. Dr. Bronin says that since Mr. Brooks doesn't have any immediate family nearby, Dawson's responsibilities have changed and he should probably call his parents. So I guess we're not the only ones who think that. Smash cut to Mitch in Dr. Bronin's office repeating the prescriptions line and Dr. Bronin being like, I know. Gail kind of heatedly insists that Dawson shouldn't have this responsibility when, in my opinion, all she and Mitch should have to say is he is 17. This document is not legally binding.
There's absolutely no way hospital legal wouldn't have been all over this.
Yeah.
I know the actor looks 25, but come on.
Yes. Dawson asks whether Dr. Bronin thinks Mr. Brooks will wake up again before he dies. Dr. Bronin doesn't know, but doesn't think it would make Dawson's decision any easier if he knew. When he leaves, Bitch starts to say what he thinks the humane decision would be, but Gail cuts him off and states that Dawson doesn't have to make any decision. Dawson says he does, but how can he know which is best? With Grams, a nurse and adult, sitting next to Dawson in silence, Mitch says it's not that kind of choice. And, you know, in case you think we're just talking out our ass, I did link in the show notes the sample health proxy form from Mass General's website, which certainly says 18.
Mm-hmm.
When we see Dawson again, he's at Mr. Brooks's house, futzing with the movie as Gretchen enters with a picnic basket. He tries to put her off, but when she offers cheese and crackers, he can't resist. He is only human. I wouldn't either. He does hope that she only brought one kind of cracker because he can't handle one more decision right now, and complains that he should be deciding between glasses and goggles on a ski hill right now. He's only 17, as we keep saying. When Dawson asks, Gretchen says the first loved one she lost was her sweet, funny grandfather on her 8th birthday. Rough. Dawson's grandfather died when he was 2, but otherwise he's had no experience with death, so he doesn't know why Mr. Brooks would think Dawson was the right person to carry out his wishes. Gretchen says Dawson has the best judgment of anyone she knows. Yikes. But she then goes on. Clip 2.
I don't think you saw how young you were and figured that you would be more likely to contribute to his end. I think you saw how old your heart is. And he knew that whatever choice you made, it would be the right one.
Or he thought Dawson wouldn't read it. And yeah. He didn't.
And he thought all those pills would do the job.
He did think that.
And they didn't.
I believe. Back at the hospital the next day, Dawson finds Grams in the chapel and kind of stupidly asks if she's praying. Guys, you're not going to believe this. She is, but she's also there for the quiet. Dawson hasn't prayed since he was a kid, and even then it was more like a wish for something he wanted but couldn't say out loud. Grams asks what he would wish for if he could. He doesn't know if he should want Mr. Brooks to wake up and tell them all they've been there long enough, or for him to die and ease his suffering. Dawson's been looking for a sign to confirm his instincts, which are telling him to keep waiting. Grams smiles and says that's what they'll do together. And then back in Mr. Brooks's room, friggin' Andy Griffith shuffles in. Sarah, you did a little research on this fellow. Do you want to drop some fun facts about Andy Griffith and what I assume was one of his last performances?
He lived a good long time. He lived another, I think, 10 years.
Oh, okay.
But we were sort of wondering on Slack / in the visual aids captions, like, was he just there, like passing through? And I was like, he must have been living in North Carolina, and went on his Wikipedia page, and that basically confirmed, like, in the later life section, yeah, he had been living in North Carolina for a while. Then, like, I just went on a journey with this Wikipedia page. Like, he won a Grammy, this man, for Best Country or Grassroots Gospel Album.
Sure.
And reading that, it was like, first of all, you forget just how many Grammys there are, and that, like, a lot of randos are kind of halfway to an EGOT that you would ever think about. Then it's like, yeah, I can absolutely see him reinterpreting a bunch of hymns and that being, like, greatest generation, sort of very soothing, reasonably well-selling album idea, and that he would have a good voice and sort of delivery for that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was quite something. But I think he probably just was in town, and maybe someone working on the staff was like, oh yeah, I worked on a Matlock, and maybe we could just call him. And so, yeah, or Presnell knew him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't actually know.
Can confirm he did have a few more performances after this. His last was in 2009 and he died in 2012. But I forgot he was in Waitress, the movie that was the movie before the Broadway show, playing Old Joe. Good movie, if you haven't seen it. Anyway, we get this. Clip 3.
Well, you've won, you old bastard. You get to see her first.
Sure. Dawson, who's been dozing in a chair beside the bed, wakes up and realizes who this is, the actor from Mr. Brooks's movie who fell in love with Mr. Brooks's girl a million years ago. His character name is Andrew Lanier. Mr. Lanier is surprised to be recognized at all, especially by someone Dawson's age, and assumes Dawson is Mr. Brooks's grandson, but Dawson says he's just a fan. Mr. Brooks wrote to Mr. Lanier the previous month after 40 years of silence to say he had been a fool and ask Mr. Lanier's forgiveness, but Mr. Lanier didn't think he had anything to forgive. Mr. Brooks only hurt himself. Mr. Lanier had thought about calling when his wife Ellie died, because Mr. Brooks would be the only one who would understand. When Dawson asks why he didn't, we get this. Clip 4.
Oh, I realized how much greater his hurt would be than mine. How many oceans bigger. All the years I had with Ellie. 3 children, a home, a good life. Still all that time, he had that part of her soul you give your first love. When he goes, he'll be with her. I suppose that's the way it should have always been. No. Goodbye, Arthur. Thanks for writing and for staying till I could say goodbye.
I mean, this is corny as fuck, but this is the absolute correct casting to sell it.
100%. Mr. Lanier, who put on a suit, presumably got on a plane and came all the way out here for a 2-minute look at Mr. Brooks in his bed because someone called him. No idea who. Maybe Grams. We never find out. Is ready to go, but Dawson stops him, begging for his advice. Clip 5.
In a situation like this, son, all that's required is a little faith.
I don't have that. I don't even know what that is.
Faith is believing in something when common sense tells you not to. Miracle on 34th Street. Arthur always believed that the best answers for life's questions could be found in the movies. Crazy idea, huh?
Not so crazy.
A kindred spirit.
Hmm.
Oh.
Sweet.
Yeah. Although, yeah, someone get Mr. Griffith a
glass
drink
of water.
Please. Just a little something.
This is a gentures are a little dry. But then he just walks out, does not say goodbye, does not care to know Dawson's name. Like, all right, bye.
Very, very Seventh Heaven adieu there. Show.
Sometime later, Joey obliges Gretchen by calling Dawson. Not such an inconvenience since she does it after Pacey has left her alone because she was being kind of a rag to him again. We'll get to it. Also, I hope Dawson appreciates the gesture because using the hotel room phone probably costs about $4 a minute, but...
Yep, sure does.
Dawson favors her with some of the wisdom he has gleaned from his proximity to death. Clip 6.
I mean, at some point, it the whole thing just becomes too much for your brain to process, you know, and all you have to rely on is your heart. Your natural human instincts.
And it's liberating. I mean, it's terrifying at first, but...
Well, I guess that's the point, isn't it?
What's that?
If we weren't so afraid to let go, we wouldn't feel so free when we finally did.
You make it sound so simple.
It's anything but that.
Yeah, all right. I'll let you have that one. We're also going to find out in the A-plot this observation is extremely on point for Joey as well.
Yeah, and for that reason, like, this conversation is contrived, but it does actually seem to move the ball. It shouldn't be what moves the ball, but we will talk about that in the A-plot.
Yeah. Dawson thinks that even in his current state, Mr. Brooks was waiting for Mr. Lanier to come say goodbye before letting go, which is a thing. Joey says that can be really hard, and suddenly Dawson straightens up and says goodbye to her with a weirdly intense finality, and then we're at the hospital as Mr. Brooks' heart monitor goes flatline, and I know Dawson is the titular character. I'm not sure we should go to his face before cutting to Mr. Brooks in bed as Dr. Bronan monitors his heartbeat, then turns off the machine, and we then see everyone who is present. Graham's next to Dawson, both of Dawson's parents, and Gretchen at the end of the group, so she's the first to leave. Mitch holds the door as Graham steps out and does a very gentlemanly thing where he sort of holds his hand up near the small of her back, but I don't think actually touches her, but nice. I've made a gif. I was just like, "That's someone was raised right. That's a nice detail to include."
Yeah, to just sort of, in case she's overcome.
Yeah.
Your hand is nearby, but you're not presuming.
Yes.
I don't understand why she wasn't the last one in the room, but again, titular character, sigh.
Yes. Anyway, Dawson's left alone with Mr. Brooks so he can have a moment his girlfriend didn't get to say, "See you, Mr. Brooks," but fine, rest in peace. For real, Mr. Brooks and Harv Presnell, we lost him.
Yeah, we did.
Hope Mr. Brooks and Ellie enjoy the Artful Dodger in heaven, and writing that in my notes is where I just got the boat is called that because his name is Arthur. So stupid. Everyone gathers at the Leary house to watch one of Mr. Brooks's pictures, although Dawson's parents seem like they're mostly watching him, which, fine.
They managed to make something out of the storyline, actually, that at the time, we were just mostly happy because Mr. Brooks was, like, just destroying Dawson on the reg, and it was like, great, this we like this character.
Yes.
But then Dawson was being less of a, you know, rag himself as season four was proceeding. And this really shouldn't have worked and was a little like cheap, I guess, in terms of eliciting emotion and having parallels to the to our teen characters and stuff like that. But thanks to some good acting and like the redemption of Leary, it they pulled it off mostly.
I agree.
For this show.
Yes, it could have been much cornier than it was. I think they calibrated it much better than I remembered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
On to the A-plot. Everyone is wilding out on the Vermont ski weekend. As Gretchen drops Pacey and Joey at the bus to the ski trip, Joey looks tense as hell even before we hear this. Clip 7.
Senior ski trip is a Capeside rite of passage, absolutely guaranteed to be chock full of the cruel and unusual.
Well, knowing our class, I highly doubt it.
Well, let's just say when I went, somebody got pregnant, somebody got arrested, and this one girl's hair caught on fire.
Wow, Gretchen, you have led such a life.
Yeah.
Does sound like me going on a band trip, though. Just saying. At the bus. Yeah. Jen tells Jack she's pretty sure they're not going to have fun. Clip 8.
So, oh, come on. Senior trips are notoriously awful. And as a rule of thumb, anything that you look forward to for too long is invariably a disappointment.
The eternal optimist speaks.
I promise to make an effort, but...
Hey, everything cool?
Absolutely.
You know, this is exactly what we need.
What do we need?
Well, it's good for people to get out of town.
People like us?
Of course, there's people who need to get out of town.
Are we those types of people?
I don't know. Do you think we're those types of people?
Everyone who plans on getting laid this weekend, get on board!
Yeah! I hope you're careful, those types though, of people.
That bus is not going to a ski resort. You can see this in the visual aids. The destination board is on the side and very clearly says Jacksonville, North Carolina. Like, guys, I would say some PA got fired, but they clearly didn't. They just don't care where you think they are anymore. They don't.
Then everyone's on the bus, Jen belatedly realizing she neither wants to ski nor knows how to. Jack says the trips aren't really about what goes on during the day, and Jen's like, duh. When Mr. Kasdan calls roll for a Penelope Price after Joey, the supposed Penelope takes a moment because Anna, snuggled up next to Drew, is posing as Penelope this weekend. Back to Jack, telling Jen that if sex were available to him this weekend, he'd be all over it. Jen reminds him about Toby and needles him about what Jack's issue is with him. Toby too cute, smart, blonde. Jack says he's too gay. Being that obvious, to use Jack's word, is a turnoff for him. And again, I realize we're coming at this from an era where Billy Porter can show up to the Oscars in a tulle skirt and gag everyone, but there's nothing even a little swishy about the Toby we have seen. Like, he's no. Not obvious. You needed to do more if this was the angle.
Yeah.
A few rows back, Drew is very confident he and Anna are going to get away with this, then leans into Pacey to murmur that it would suck to be the only guy not to get it in this weekend. And Pacey just blinks, and I guess because it's TV, we're supposed to think none of that was audible to Joey 6 inches away from Pacey's face because she does not react. And then at the lodge, Mr. Kasdan announces that room assignments are single sex and the mini bar keys have been removed. Then he fucks off to the bar, leaving some kid to distribute room keys. Drew commandeers the bucket, tossing one to Pacey and Joey, one to Jack and Jen, no sexual complications there, as he says, and takes one for Anna and himself, then wishes the kid luck handling everybody else. Jack snits about how obnoxious Drew is, and Jen says they're making an effort not to complain just before she slips on a patch of ice and falls on her ass, and not to be Tory spelling, but I was triggered, because that's me.
Oh my God. Yes, me too. That was you like outside my house.
Sure
you
was.
Really should have sued my neighbor. Mm-hmm. Little salt, Ari, Jesus.
Yeah, sorry. That was a night Dave had to help me put my pants on so I could go to the ER. Rough one.
Yeah, you could still sue that guy. He still owns the building.
Oh, really? After some establishing shots of screaming teenagers enjoying the wintry weather, we're in the hotel room with Pacey and Joey. She is nervous as a cat, fidgeting around the bed and the fireplace, while Pacey says this is just like being on the boat, except there's no hammocks or water. They can just put up the do not disturb sign and pretend they're anchored off the coast of Greenland, she says, saying she's freezing, which, yes, it is positively frigid in there. Pacey just wants to kick back with junk food and TV. Joey mopes that it'll be just like any Friday night in Capeside then, but he says this TV gets way more channels, and when he turns it on, it's porn. Time to revisit the conversation that closed things out for them in the last episode, Clip 9.
Oh, come on, please tell me we could laugh about this now.
Laugh about what?
Sex. Tell me that we could laugh about sex now, because it seems to me that's the only rational thing to do. You know, you can't enshrine it. You can't run from it, because it's everywhere. It's like food and water and air.
Well, can't we just breathe something else?
You realize how ridiculous that sounds, right?
Pace, it's just a week, and I really don't want to spend it like we spent the past week.
Which is how?
Having this incredible tension between us every time we get within 3 feet of each other.
Well, I'm not feeling tense. I'm feeling relaxed. I'm on vacation, Joe.
Really?
Yes, really.
So we're in complete agreement here.
I don't know what we're agreeing about, but I'm sure we're in complete agreement about it.
We're agreeing that this weekend does not have to be about sex.
This weekend doesn't have to be about sex.
Should a sigh of relief be that loud? Because, oh my God, lady, like, what are you doing? And why did you complain that it was going to be about, would be like every other night in Capeside when he said that, if what you really hope is that it is like every other night in Capeside where you don't have sex?
And since you want it to be like every other night in Capeside, why don't you get on the bed, find a movie that isn't whatever, Dawson's Creek, mm-hmm. on the porn channel.
Yeah.
Get some snacks and just be normal. Like, you were on a boat together all summer, and since you weren't doing it, you were passing the time some other way. One of those ways is, you know, referred to later, which is cute and good continuity for mm-hmm. once. But it's like, guys, like, this is the have you been standing in a charger the whole time conversation uh-huh. that we keep having. That's yeah. like, do you just not talk to each other at all until a camera shows up and then you start fighting about how you're not fucking? Like,
right.
there are solutions to this.
Yeah.
Have conversations we don't see. Start fucking. Mm-hmm. We'll get to it. And be normal. Like, I know you're teenagers, but you do have other things to talk about. Go right. to a movie.
Well, and not only that, like, this is not the only time they've had access to a bed and privacy either. Like, he lives with his sister. She's routinely gone for hours at a time on fixed shifts. They've had plenty of time to be in an empty room together before. Like, if you want to do it, do it. If you don't, just do something else. Like,
yeah.
Stop doing this to
don't
yourself.
Go on this trip. Like,
yes.
Who paid for it? Like, ski trips are not cheap. Mm-hmm. Who paid for this? You could have stayed home at the B&B if you wanted to avert your eyes from your boyfriend's penis. But anyway, here we all are.
Over to Jen and Jack's room, where she asks, what if her foot needs to be amputated? This is also me, except when I have a bad headache and tell Dave he needs to make me toast so my head doesn't fall off. Jack asks if Jen wants to find a doctor now, and she cheerfully says no, she's probably just bruised. Jack's determined not to let her injury ruin their weekend. He'll carry her around on his shoulders if he has to. Jen says she does need him to help her take her pants off so she can take a bath, and he tenses up. She's a girl, he's a boy. There are boundaries and rules, he thinks. Amused, Jen says she doesn't think they're going to kick him off the team, meaning team queer, for it, but he insists it's inappropriate. So Jen gives up and staggers toward the bathroom, warning him that she'll blame him whenever she has to attach her wooden foot in the future, but when she tries to take her own pants off in the common space, he gets even more antsy, asking how she would like it if he got undressed in front of her, and she smiles devilishly so that he immediately withdraws the question, which was so cute.
Yeah.
Then we're in town as Pacey peers through the window at a quaint-looking bistro. Soon they are joined by Jen and Jack, who've heard about a pizza place up the road called Greco's that has high school prices. Joey immediately says it sounds fun, and Pacey gives one slightly wistful look back at the more romantic place before holding his arm out to Joey. The party has taken about 4 steps before Jen falls on this ice. But This happened to me in Toronto the week that Dave and I got engaged, twice in one night, two different patches of ice. I'm very graceful. It's also the night I saw The Godfather for the first time because it was 25 years after its release. They had re-released it to theaters. Real memorable slash painful weekend.
It really brought me back to the winter of 94. Mm. I was in college. It was so much snow in New Jersey that the entire state ran out of road cinders was using kitty litter on the road. Like, they ran out of salt. They ran out of cinders. I think they eventually ran out of kitty litter. Mm-hmm. Started using actual kitties. Just kidding. I think finally spring came.
Yeah.
But there was one particular day where I was walking on some like hard packed snow on a path that had been carved out of like 6 feet of snow. It was very Buffalo in central Jersey. At that time, I had fallen on the way to class. I had fallen on the way from class to my next class. And then I had fallen down. I was like on the front walk of the eating club. Fell down again. And it was that like tingling, stabbing nerve pain of probably a cracked tailbone. And I just lay there and just like started sobbing. I was like, just leave me here and wait for it to melt. Just like bring me a sandwich. I don't care. I lay there crying. People brought me a sandwich. My roommate brought me a cheese sandwich and a coffee and some Kleenex. And finally, I took my broken ass into the building. But even for someone who falls down as much as I do and bangs into stuff because she has terrible balance, it's a lot of times. There are some days when you're like, I wish the world were less hostile to my lack of coordination. But yeah. I couldn't tell. I stepped through it frame by frame. They go to a wider shot, so that might be a stunt double. Mm-hmm. If it's not, Michelle Williams, you are a hero for committing to that absolute air-catching banana peel slip.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever it is wearing the paddedest snow pants. Mm-hmm. Bless. I hope everyone was okay. Well done. I chortled.
It's very good. In the restaurant, Joey and Pacey have ended up at the same table as Anna and Drew, the former just winding up a dumb-sounding sexcapade story as we join them. Joey is silent, so, of course, clip 10.
Now what's the matter, Potter? What personal experience does it contribute on the girls just want to have fun front?
The amount of sexual pleasure the average teenage girl gets from the average teenage guy in some random keg party hookup is negligible at best.
Unless you're doing it with a man who knows what he's doing.
See? I rest my case. Girls have it way easier than guys do, right? There's no performance anxiety, and once they decide to do it, all they have to do is ask. They should be the ones carrying the condoms around in their wallets. Yeah! Thank you.
Not every guy walks around with a condom in his wallet, Drew.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Guys, let's go wallet.
Okay, where to start?
I wanted to be on her side. She's so exhausting. Everyone produces a condom immediately. And judging by Joey's face, her vagina closes up. Anna notices that Pacey hasn't revealed his wallet yet, and he claims he left it at the lodge. Just a PSA for any of our young listeners, and we have a link about this in the show notes as well. Don't keep your condoms in your wallet or pocket. There's too much friction and heat. It will weaken the latex. Don't do it if you actually intend to use them instead of just have them as a prop.
And also, ladies, also have them. Everyone have them. Even if you are not going to use them, it's like tampons. Someone else might need one. Have one.
Well, now with the snack bugles, they've shrunkflationed them to the size where they no longer go into your fingers. If you carry around 5 condoms on you at any given time, you can put those on your fingers.
That's
and
true.
You can pretend you're Paul McCrane from RoboCop just before he gets splattered on the car.
Yeah, floppy fingers.
Mm-hmm. That's my cosplay advice for you this week. Goodbye.
Later, as everyone is walking out of a place clearly called Bell's, not Greco's, Joey asks why Pacey didn't want to show his wallet. Pacey repeats that it's at the lodge, but she quietly says it's in his pocket. So he hands her his wallet. And sure enough, there is a Durex condom in it. Pacey, I expect better condom hygiene from a future boat doctor. But she is appalled, and I don't know why. What was the whole trip to the free clinic for? If not for her to also be prepared, she should have condoms as well. Not in her pocket, but somewhere safe.
And foam and a bunch of other options. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's been many moons since I was in the condom market.
Yes.
But I think they do have the kind that are in a, this is terrible, but it's like a little butter packet that you would get.
Oh, yeah,
at the
yeah.
diner. Mm-hmm. Or like the jelly that keeps it a little more safe because mm-hmm. it's not like laying flat. It's not going to get stretched out. It's protected more from heat. You can't put it in your wallet, but that's the idea. So mm-hmm.
the next day, Joey is sitting alone on a picnic table watching merriment happen around and without her. When Jack joins her and comments that this place has a real John Hughes 80s vibe, Joey thinks he means it's tacky, but he's referring to the wholesome teen-targeted Americana and nostalgia for a time they didn't experience themselves. Joey apologizes and says she's in a funk. When he asks, she says her problem is sex. Clip 11.
Sex is my problem. Sex is always my problem. I have so much conviction about waiting till the right moment, but feeling guilty or obligated, and I don't.
Has it ever occurred to you that you might be so caught up in trying to find the right choice that you never really stop to think about the possibility that there may not be a right choice or a wrong choice, just a bunch of choices?
No real help.
You don't need help.
You need to get laid. Just kidding. But that is why I cut it
off. Also, nice summer of 69 playing in the background.
Anyway, they go on. Clip 12.
There's nothing to figure out here. It's only what you feel.
Well, I feel fear.
Well, the only really exciting things in life require more courage than we currently have. Oh, deep breath and a leap. And the kind of fear that you're talking about, sometimes it's how you know what's worthwhile.
That's good advice.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure I buy this particular like koan coming from him.
Right.
But it is really good advice. It's like, you know, Jimmy Dugan and League of Their Own.
Right.
Hard is what makes it great. Mm-hmm. Except a different part of that speech. But also that.
So Jack goes back to his room to discover that Jen picked the locked minibar with a hairpin and has already had a few. Jack is so fired up from his conversation with Joey that he tells Jen he wants to stop playing life so safe and do something dangerous and stupid. Get drunk, get in a fight. So I guess that's what we're supposed to take from the out of character speech, is like he's convincing himself as well.
Mm.
Jen says he can have a drink with her now and she'll fight him later, which I also liked.
Yeah, that was funny.
He says she's the expert at acting out, so what dangerous thing does she want to do? She wants to sit there with him. I want them to close the fridge, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Over to Joey and Pacey's room, where Anna stops by in her string bikini to make sure they know people are going to the hot tub, and Joey's like, got it! When she's closed the door on Anna, she snits at Pacey for having nothing to say, but he thinks whatever he does say is just going to piss her off. Joey tells him to let her know when he does have anything to say, and Pacey sighs that he's sure glad they tabled the sex discussion. Clip 13.
You know, we've been having such a relaxing weekend so far, I'd hate to ruin it with a bunch of passive-aggressive insinuations.
I'm really sorry, Pace, that all of my hang-ups and neuroses are putting a crimp in your social life. You know, why don't you just go join your friend in the hot tub and feel free?
And give you something to be really pissed off about, right? That's what you want, is it?
No, she's what you want, isn't she? Someone who's a little bit more fun, a little bit more experienced, a little bit more eager to help to make this a truly memorable weekend.
I want you, Joe. But there's no sense in me arguing the point if you're so eager to refute it.
Look, I don't doubt that you want me, Pacey. I don't know why or for what reason.
Okay, please, just stop right there. You and I both know that if I was in this relationship for sex and sex alone, I would not have lasted for 9 months.
No, you wouldn't have.
But look, Joe, I refuse to feel guilty about this, because the fact of the matter is, it's not a bad thing when you want to sleep with somebody when you love them as much as I love you.
But there is something wrong with not wanting to.
No. No. I just wish I knew what that something was.
Yeah.
Decide something. I mean, like, it's the rondelay. It's so much.
You guys should not have come on this trip together.
Mm-hmm.
You need a break, because she's just determined to convince herself that she is ruining everything and to pick fights and to melt wax all over any conversation, even that doesn't start out about this.
Mm-hmm.
what the show wants the problem to be and what I feel the problem actually probably would be are not the same. Mm-hmm. So it's a little frustrating to watch her doing this and sort of like resisting. And it's like, just admit that you are afraid that you aren't experienced enough because he's been with other people.
Yes.
Just say that.
Yes.
Subtract Dawson from this. But that is totally relatable.
Yes.
And even though you're unable to stop yourself from being a coos about it, like, yeah, been there, you know, when God was a child, but I've been there. Like,
yeah,
just make it about that. But right, this is like just exhausting.
I mean, I know they don't want to remind us about Tamara, and I don't blame them. But yes, no, I had that note as well. Like, just say, you've already done it with two different people, and I'm worried that I'm not going to be as good as them. Like, despite Drew's whole, like, girls don't even, there's no performance expectation or whatever the fuck he said, where it's like, well, that's not true, obviously. And
yeah,
you know, instead we just get the like, well, I just don't want to and I don't know why. Like, well, come up with a reason because you're not dumb. Like, this is annoying everyone, especially me.
You said you were afraid. Just say, like, you know what girls also get is a bunch of fucking old wives' tales about how much it's going to hurt and yep, shit people are going to talk and all of this stuff. Like, just say that.
Yeah.
And also say, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be ready. Like, you kind of aren't, but then you just blunder ahead. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They're so close. Like, they're so much closer in mm-hmm, season four to like getting everything to line up so that it's realistic.
Yeah.
And so it's even more frustrating when it's like, oh my God,
yep,
just be a person. But no.
Alas, the scene is not over yet. Clip 14.
I mean, I know that you're scared. I get it. I mean, you tell me that you want to be scared together, but then you won't tell me what you're scared of. And I think you know exactly what it is. You're just too afraid to say his name.
Dawson? That is not fair, Pacey. You can't bring his name up every single time our relationship
is. Okay, fine. Look. I'll tell you what. Do you want to know what I'm scared of? Because I'm not scared of whether or not we sleep together. If and when you and I decide to do that, it will be right. What I am scared of is that little piece of your heart that will always belong to Dawson Leary. Okay? I'm scared of that piece of your heart that always envisioned your first time being with him. I'm scared of that part of you that just doesn't want it to be me. That's what I'm scared of.
That's how you feel. Oh. Well, well, if that's how you feel, then why did you stay? Why stick around for 9 months if that's what you believe, Pacey?
I'm just a glutton for punishment, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what we've been saying.
Yeah, like from his standpoint, that fear is fine. Like, I don't have that mm-hmm, a problem with that being his motivation.
Yeah.
But then for her to hear that and have this reaction mm-hmm, is just like, Livia Soprano, find a way to be a human being to this boy who loves mm-hmm, you.
I mean, this is clearly supposed to tie into the whole your first love is always your best love thing from the B plot. But I mean, our shared counter theory of she's worried about measuring up to his previous partners makes more sense than involving yeah, Dawson at all, which is why what happens in the next episode is even more infuriating.
Ugh. Yes. Oh, my God. Rage inducing.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Flames side of my face.
Uh-huh.
Not a spoiler.
Then we're back with Jen and Jack and the wide open mini fridge. Jack is apologizing for being a shitty drunk. Jen and her terrible hair, this is the worst it's looked in the episode, you'll see it in the visual aids, calls him baby as she says, he's a great drunk, but he thinks good drunks get more fun as they get more wasted, whereas he just gets sullen and introspective. And they drunkenly burble back and forth about which of them is braver until finally Jack says he's scared he's going to end up alone, only ever someone's brother or friend, but not anyone's everything. And most of all, he's scared he's never going to find a guy he loves as much as he loves Jen. And she smiles weepily and kisses her fingers, touching them to his forehead. And then they kiss. And then they kiss.
Yeah, they do.
Really solve a lot of problems if they would both just be bisexual. But spoiler, that's not what happens.
No.
Pacey runs into Anna as she's getting out of the hot tub and says when she asks that he's not getting in, he was just taking a walk. She notices that he looks down and wants to reciprocate after he was so nice to her on the mini golf date. And everyone watching who is old enough seizes up, thinking we have another Ariel from the record company on our hands. Then back to Jen and Jack. They've apparently been making out this whole time, because when we rejoin them, he's totally on top of her on the floor and she's telling him they have to stop. He is drunk, lonely, and gay. The most depressing I feel pretty rewrite ever. She doesn't want them to do something they'll regret when their feelings pass. When she goes to get them each a tall glass of water, not coffee. Good job, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Jack reaches out and tells her he's sorry, and she smiles and takes his hand, and I think they're going to be okay.
I think so.
And then Mr. Kasdan is wandering around when he comes upon Jen trying to dump all the tiny liquor bottles into a trash can outside, but loses most of them on the ground. And he's like, what the hell? And she just says recycling and takes off. And if he's getting paid extra for chaperoning, he's not earning it. I'll just say that.
Mm-mm. Nope.
By an outdoor fire, Anne is telling Pacey she knows he's not ready to break up with Joey yet, but she thinks it would be a shame to waste this opportunity, and leans in for a kiss. And being nice to her is one thing. Confiding in her is something else. I don't buy that he would, honestly.
Yeah, I don't really either.
But when she leans in, he leans away, and clip 15.
This is not going to happen.
I don't understand. It's just sex. It's not that big of a deal. We're all adults.
No, we're not adults. We're not even close to being adults, and it is that big a deal. I have someone that I want to be with for more than just one night. So the thought of losing her or hurting her, it's not even a consideration. For me, it's not about wanting to have sex. It's about wanting to share the most intimate thing that you can possibly share with someone. No matter how long you have to wait.
Phrase it to her that way. Say this to Joey. Don't say it to this idiot.
Yeah. Credit to the show for putting the idiot's perspective in there. That's like, just, you know, be free. Live sure. your life. Like, you know, condoms and everything, but sex positive and not making it a whole soulmatey BFD is not a bad perspective to have, even though we're not supposed to align with it.
Right. But turns out Pacey doesn't have to phrase it that way to Joey, because she's been eavesdropping and looking a lot more cheerful and relaxed, I guess, thanks to Dawson's whole speech about trusting your human instincts and how good it feels when you let go of your fears, which we heard in the B-plot. Pacey asks how long she has been there. Clip 16.
Long enough to remember why it is that I love you. Why every part of me loves you.
Ooh, every part!
I don't get it.
But then...
she mean her elbow, guys.
She means her eyebrows. Then she fucking forehead kisses him. Like, of all times to kiss his mouth, right after you imply your vagina loves him, probably the best time, but whatever, he smiles.
Yeah, start a little lower, lady. Come on.
She tells him he can still be angry at her. He doesn't have to be perfect all the time, and she doesn't have to be so afraid. And finally, they kiss mouths, and he suggests they go in, lock the door, cuddle up, and he'll read her a story. She says they didn't bring their book. He'll make a story up. She likes that idea. And later, she's brushing her hair when he comes out of the bathroom, I guess, and asks to take the brush. And I suppose her love language is things my mom used to do with me before she died, because she asks him if he still has his wallet. And in the sitcom version of this, he's like, yes, wait, where is it? And then they end the episode out in the snow looking for it. But in this version, clip 17.
And I'll throw it away.
I want to throw the wrapper away.
Ooh. I don't get it.
That's not bad. I mean, considering how awful she's been this episode, like, okay, you got me.
Wait, like for scrapbooking?
Yeah. I mean, they should scrapbook that one instead of using it if it's been in his wallet, but whatever.
Oh, God.
Clip 18.
This is about how you carried my bag off the bus yesterday. This is about how when we go to the movies and you go and you buy popcorn, you always make sure you bring back a napkin so I don't wipe all the grease on my jeans.
Sexy!
And this is about how just last week when we were at miniature golf, you took all of the shots first so I would know the correct path.
Sexy?
What?
You taught me how to drive.
Sexy.
And last year at prom, He knew that the bracelet I was wearing was my mom's. You kissed me first, sweetheart. The second time, you counted to 10 before doing it again, just in case I wanted to stop you. You bought me a wall.
Yeah, that you never painted anything on.
Wait, you guys say some sexy things. Go ahead. Yeah, you know, some things in like things I did for you. It doesn't have to be sexy. Go ahead. Get ready, Sarah. You both have to contribute. Just things. Doesn't matter. Let's go.
These stairs aren't up to code. That was Dan's love language.
Okay, go try.
You got me Krispy Kreme donuts on my birthday.
That was me and Dan. But anyway.
Anyway, there is more. Clip 19.
We are alone on a boat for 3 months. And you understood without a word why I wasn't ready. Do you have to ask me now why I am?
I mean, I would have some follow-ups, but I'd do the fucking first and then whatever it takes. Get it.
She says she's going to count to 10 and then she's going to start kissing him. And if he doesn't want her to, he's going to have to stop her. But by this point, his shirt and undershirt are off. And tomorrow we will all know who fucked. Join us on Patreon. Get the sticker. That's it.
Oh, it was worth it just for that. Thank honestly. You. Well done.
Let's name our episode MVP. Andy Griffith.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job, Arthur.
Least valuable player. Hospital lawyer.
Joey for functionally making the LVP sound for 98% of the episode, and it's really, really like you're just wearing me out, girl. But hopefully, the attitude actually, I know it doesn't, so you know what? Fine, but good for you, good for both of you. Hooray!
Hooray!
Next time on Again with This, the show tries to get artsy again with the structure, but it's the same old melodrama. Joey and Pacey are insecure about finally consummating. Dawson is weirded out by unexpectedly inheriting. Joey and Dawson spend an entire act overanalyzing. And Jen's frosty compulsory therapy has your co-hosts celebrating. You might find our visual aids for this episode nauseating, but we're fucking doing them anyway. Like we've done for every episode of this podcast ever, you will find them along with the episodes themselves on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Glutton for Punishment, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky, Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Kindred Spirit, Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, won, the old bastard. Talk to you next time.
I can be sexual, Dawson.
Oh, no. I should have known. Yet I was not prepared. Getting that frog juice in your belly button. Girl, come on.